Welcome to KUA's regular board meeting of April 7th, 2021. Please join me in the Pledge Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Approval of last month of today's agenda. I have a motion.
Make a motion to accept.
Second. Have a second.
Second.
Everyone in favor, signify by aye. Aye. Those opposed, nobody. Agenda approved. Awards and presentations. Brian.
Yes, Madam Chair. Good to see everyone. We've got several awards and presentations this afternoon. The first is the Florida the presentation of the Florida Municipal Electric Association Safety Award. And Cindy Herrera, Vice President of Human Resources, is going to take care of that for us.
Yes, good afternoon. Nice to see everyone this afternoon. I have with us the Florida Municipal Electric Association has presented its annual safety award to KUA for utilities' continued commitment to safe work practices during this past year. KUA earned the state's third best safety record for electric utilities with 400,000 to 949,999 worker hours of exposure. Entrants were placed in categories according to the number of worker hours and judged for the most incident-free records during 2020. KUA's excellent safety performance is a key factor in driving down insurance costs, which helps reduce utility operating costs as well. I'd like to also add that KUA has won this award consecutively for the last 13 years, a great accomplishment to our workforce. I'd like to
Madam Chair, if you would join me in front.
Thank you. Very nice.
First service award this afternoon, Mr. Gary Lamb, Apprentice Lineman 2 in our Operations Department. Gary, come on up. Gary's not here?
Oh.
Okay. Well, we're going to recognize Gary for 5 years anyway. Congratulations, Gary. Okay. What about Brendan LaFlamme? Is he here?
No.
Okay, 5 years. We're going to recognize him as well. Austin. Austin's here. Austin Gutter is a lineman in our operations department. We're celebrating 5 years of service to KUA. Thank you, Austin. Billy Suffin? William Suffin?
He's here.
All right. He's a lineman in our operations department. We're recognizing him for 5 years of service to KUA. TR is not here. Okay. Well, TR is our Assistant Vice President of Engineering and Operations. We're going to recognize TR for 5 years of service to KUA. Thank you, TR. Okay. These next few aren't here as well, but Mr. Brian Vancor, the power plant operator mechanic in our operations department, recognizing him for 10 years of service. Thank you, Brian. Willard Peterson couldn't be here as well. He's a supervising utility worker in our operations department, and we're recognizing him for 10 years of service as well. Michael Thornton is a power plant operator mechanic in our operations department. Could not be here as well. We're recognizing him for 10 years of service to KUA. Mr. Diaz, Robert here? All right. Come on up here, Robert. Robert is a lineman first class in our operations department. And we're recognizing Robert for 15 years. Thank you, Robert. And Lee Gonzalez couldn't be here. He's a data telecom network administrator in our IT department. And we're going to recognize Lee for 20 years of service to KUA. Miss Kayla Almeida, you would make your way up here. We're going to recognize you as our April 2021 Employee of the Month, y'all.
Yeah. Make a U-turn, make a U-turn.
Kayla's an engineering technical assistant in our operations department. One of your fellow co-workers put you in for this, and this is what they have to say about you. During the difficult times that the pandemic has brought, it has been amazing to have people that still have a positive attitude, great enthusiasm, and a willingness to be of service. Our engineering technical assistant, Kayla, has been the best because she has shown empathy and flexibility in dealing with the different challenges that we've been faced with on a daily basis. Kayla has maintained open communication channels with the remote workforce while assisting the engineers with essential details when it comes to opening new projects, finding ways to improve in our paperless process transition, releasing of jobs, closing of jobs, etc. All this, most of the time without having the usual face-to-face contact. The manner and attitude in which the message is transmitted is as important as the message itself, and she's shown a lot of professionalism in doing that. I've worked with Kayla y'all for 2 years when I was downstairs, and a pleasure to work with, so I mirror your colleagues' sentiments, so thank you.
You can introduce us and we'll.
This is Director Ortega.
Where is?
Director Van Meter.
And here's a shirt that's especially for you.
Director Hemphill.
Here's this nice trophy.
And Director Sanchez.
The official valet, free parking for that rear view.
Next item is hear the audience. Is there anyone here who wishes to address the board? Seeing none, we move on to the next item, the consent agenda.
I move approval.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Hearing none, motion approved. Public hearing. There's none. Move on to next item, presentations. Brian?
Madam Chair, there are no informational presentations this afternoon.
We go on to old business.
Yes, Madam Chair, there's one item under old business, Boy Scouts of America sponsorship. At last month's board meeting, We had on the agenda a request for a sponsorship from the Boy Scouts of America Central Florida. Today we've got a representative from that organization here to provide the board with a presentation that will be followed by a revised staff recommendation regarding the sponsorship request. And here to tell us a little bit more is Tiffany Henderson.
Good afternoon. We have with us today representatives from the Boy Scouts of America Central Florida Council, Tracy Raber, Development Director for the Central Florida Council, and Halvern Johnson, Field Director who manages Osceola County and several other counties. The vision of the Central Florida Council is to provide unparalleled experiences for youth while instilling character, citizenship, and leadership in each child who enters the scouting program. So with that, I'll hand it over to Tracy and Halvern.
Thank you and good afternoon. As Tiffany mentioned, my name is Halvern Johnson. I oversee Osceola, Brevard, Volusia, and Flagler counties. And I just, before we start, I just want to, by show of hands, how many people in the room were once Boy Scouts? I like that. Excellent. Just to let you know, the Boy Scouts of America is one of the oldest organizations in our country. It's been around since 1910. It's all about making our youth productive citizens in society, teaching them good moral values, and bringing families together. That's the beauty of the Boy Scouts of America. That's why it's been around for over 100 years. We have several campouts that we do. We bring families together, siblings, grandparents. It's all about bringing families. That's the beauty of it. The Pinewood Derby, for those that don't know what the Pinewood Derby is, it's a block of wood. It's our Cub Scouts, ages 5 to 10. And what's behind that block of wood is their youth put wheels on it, they paint it, and they race it down a track, get trophies and ribbons and all that neat things. But what really is behind that event is the mentoring, the mother and father interacting with that child, watching them and mentoring them. That's the beauty of the Scouts. That's why we've been around for so long, providing unparalleled experience to more youth. So at this time, I want to turn it over to our development director, Tracy, and she's going to do the presentation for you.
Thank you, Halvern. I just want to let you guys know I am the development director, but I actually just moved to Kissimmee. So, I had the nice trip up here on John Young. So I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to come and talk to you guys today about scouting in Central Florida. All right. The Central Florida Council is a nonprofit 501c3 that is chartered to provide the scouting program in 7 counties in Central Florida, including Osceola. We are one of the largest youth-serving agencies instilling timeless values of character, citizenship, and leadership in each young man and woman who enters our scouting program by using educational-based activities and outdoor opportunities. We traditionally serve over 20,000 scouts and 6,000 volunteer leaders in our council. And in Osceola County, we have 1,800 scouts and 400 volunteers in 50 units. Our total 2021 revenue budget is $5.3 million. 35% of our revenue comes from our Friends of Scouting campaign, and the community portion of that campaign consists of our Golden Eagle dinner sponsorships, which is what we're here to talk to you guys about today. At this, the Golden Eagle events, we have corporations, foundations, and individuals that contribute to the scouting program. And one thing I want to make sure that you guys are aware of, that all donations received stay local, and none of the money goes to our national organization. So all the money that we raise is used for the youth in our community. Like Tiffany said, our vision is to provide unparalleled experiences for more youth. We want parents to say that scouting offers their families fun and adventurous things to do. This fun and adventure helps their son or daughter develop leadership skills and values important to good citizenship and service to others. And in order to be able to fulfill these promises to our scouts and their families, we spend over $300 per scout each year. And this is the this year's Osceola Golden Eagle event. We are honoring this year Sam Hott, who is the co-owner of Wild Florida. And so we're really excited about that. And here's a list of our 2021 event sponsors. This was as of 3/26, and so we've received some more since then. But this is a list of our current sponsors. So I want to talk to you a little bit about how your $7,500 gift will support the 25 Scouts in Osceola County this year. The first thing that is the opportunity is for kids to go to camp. It will support outdoor adventures. It will help. It helps to maintain our top-notch year-round camping facility, the Leonard and Marjorie Williams Family Scout Reservation, better known as Camp Lenoche. Camp Lenoche is a premier Boy Scout camp in the southern region. We have over 1,600 acres of natural Florida forest, and camp is home to many different programs on weekends as well as our world-famous summer and winter camp opportunities. And so we're going to watch a short video about some of the activities that Scouts can participate in. Those are just a few of the activity areas that our youth are able to participate in. And, you know, we have a wonderful facility here. And not only do our scouts, are they able to participate, but we also have law enforcement weekends. We have JROTC that comes out to our camp and Young Marines, just to say, name a few. And besides the activities and camps that we offer at Camp Lenoche, we also have local camping opportunities for the scouts in the area. We also, obviously, Halvern talked about the Pinewood Derby. And so we have a lot of different activities that we provide to our scouts throughout the year. Oh, maybe. It's not clicking for me. Oh, there. Oh, maybe. Oh, there we go. All right. Second year gift allows us to provide financial assistance to individuals who would otherwise not be able to afford to join the scouting program. And we want you guys to be aware that we never turn a scout or a family away because of their inability to pay for scouting. And one of the reasons for sponsorships is to be able to provide that funding so that everyone can join the scouting program. And here's just some pictures of our scouts in action. Different meetings, out of camp. And one of the best ways to provide unparalleled experiences is to make sure that our scouts have trained leaders. This training includes our youth protection training, which helps to make sure that all of our scouts are in a safe environment. We offer monthly leader trainings, where leaders continue to receive ongoing training and information so that they're able to provide the best program possible to their scouts. And it's not just leader training for our adults. We also have training for our youth as well. One of those trainings is our National Youth Leadership Training, where scouts learn the concept of what it means to be a leader, how to be a leader. So they learn what it means, how to do it, and these are the skills that they will be able to take and use for the rest of their life. Here's a picture of some of our scouts doing some experiments, you know, the float and egg one. So, and we also help with customer service and community service as well. So the council employs 21 full-time professional staff, and our staff, we support and empower over 6,000 volunteers helping to drive and deliver our scouting program. Our council owns and operates the Wayne Dench Boy Scout Service Center, where leaders and parents can come and get their questions answered and shop for their scouting supplies at our scout shop. We also include some other services. We provide membership, recruitment materials, and support so that more youth can join the scouting program. We provide advancement support, such as Eagle Scout paperwork processing. We also support service projects, which include Scouting for Food, which is one of Central Florida's largest one-day food drives. And we provide insurance to our volunteers and our participants. Here's some more pictures of some of our scouts. Our scouts in a parade. And as you can see, you know, we're very good stewards with the money that we raise. We understand how, you know, valuable our gifts that we receive are. And so we do really, we make your money go as far as we can to make sure that all of our youth that join the scouting program are provided with the unparalleled experiences that we say that we will give them. So thank you, guys.
Thank you. Do we have an approval, a motion to make on this one?
Staff does have a revised recommendation. You have something here? You have a question, Director Hemphill?
Pardon me?
I said, do you have a question?
I was just wondering last year, since there was no dinner, how the donation that was made by KUA was used.
It was still used in the same way. All of our funds, none of the funds really go to pay for the dinner itself. The funds still go to provide the scouting program. We had our scouting program was still up and running last year, maybe in a little bit different version. We had online merit badges. We offered 23,000 online merit badge opportunities. We did have camp in a limited version, you know, with the COVID restrictions, but we did have people at camp. So the funds were still used in the exact same way, just different. So it wasn't used for the dinner. They were used to provide the program to our kids.
And what services are actually provided to the scouts that are not able to fund it themselves?
Same.
The same.
Same service, yep.
Yep.
It's because we make sure all youth are going to have the opportunity. We'll figure out a way to fund them. That's not a problem.
Yep. Okay. Does that answer
another
your
question?
Anybody?
Ray.
So I was a member of Troop 295 right here. It was at the Methodist Church. Huh?
That was my son.
There you go. And we had a lot of kids when I was there who couldn't afford uniforms, stuff like that. Uh-huh. We would try to apply on their behalf for grants and stuff like that through the CFC.
Uh-huh.
And we're always told, oh, there's no money or they don't meet criteria. So we had to do our own due diligence as a troop to help these kids out. So how hard is it for these kids nowadays to obtain funds and stuff like that?
It's not hard. Basically, what you'll do, and I don't know what the communication was with your adult leaders that you had in your troop. However, with all they have to do now, if they are receiving scholarship funds, they are required to sell popcorn and also camp cards. And that because a scout is thrifty. They have to learn that, you know, if you're giving something, you still have to give back. So they do have to sell that to also raise money for their own individual troop as well. But if there's a scholarship form they fill out and pretty much, you know, we review it and it would make sure that they can get the funds, whether it's a uniform, a book, or something, things of that nature that they need to provide, you know, them with.
Okay. Anybody else?
Nope.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So staff recommends sponsorship of the Central Florida Council of Boy Scouts of America at the $7,500 level for 2021, with funds being specifically directed to support the 25 scouts in Osceola County.
Do I have a motion to approve this?
So moved. Yep, second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone against it? None. So motion approved. Thank you.
It's a good program.
It is.
I want all the kids to be able to say that KUA helped them. New business.
Yes, Madam Chair, there is one item under new business this afternoon. Approval of expenditure for engineering services for the addition of a second auto transformer at our Meridia substation. And we've got Larry Matter, Vice President of Operations, to tell us more about that item.
Thank you, Brian. As the title suggests, what we're doing is we're planning on to add an additional transformer, but today what we'll be asking for is the engineering. This transformer will be installed next year, but to get started, we have to get the engineering done first. So a substation auto transformer, there's a picture of the actual one that's there. We'll be putting one very similar to that. It's not an automatic. Auto is a Greek word that means self. It just means it's a single winding. And the single winding, the difference between that and the double winding, is I'm sure you want to know. I can see, will somebody wake up genius? I get through this. But it's more efficient at much higher voltages. This is one of our high voltage substations. We have three that have 230 kV. This is one of them. And the reason we're adding a second, we were going to go with we did a study in 2017, and we knew around this time that this was starting to get in its age. We've actually rewound it once in 1989. And we thought, well, should we put a bigger one there? But if a big one fails, then we have nothing there. So we thought, well, we'll get something the same size, and then a couple of years out in the budget, we'll replace this one. Now, this is a layout. Everything is in that's in the dotted line around there. I guess I didn't have a – I think it's pointer sort of works, doesn't it? No. But in the dotted line at the top where it says new equipment – so we're getting two breakers, so that's going to protect us from the 230 that's coming from the Taft substation that OUC has. So we're getting the 230 coming there. So we have those to protect us. If something goes wrong, they open up and there's no electricity going into them. And then we have the new auto transformer itself. We'll go there, and then it has another breaker on the other side of protect the rest of our system, because from those two, we go to our 69 system that goes throughout our system to hold up our keep our voltage and reliability. So as I said before, we're here for the we're here to do the engineering to begin with, and we have a contract with a master services agreement with some of our different engineering firms, and Burns McDonald seems to be the best fit for this job. So we chose them, and you see the cost is $563,850, and for that they will design the substation and all the settings and everything we need from relays for that, and you name it. Then they'll make a procurement bid so that we can get the equipment, and then they'll be on site and assist us on the when we actually do the installation. So that's what this is for. So what I'm asking for is if you this is the recommendation of for approval.
I have a question.
Yes.
You said that this was for the design.
Design.
So then they'll be going to be on site and. There'll be extra dollars there.
No. This is the engineering services from beginning to end.
Even for the installation?
Yeah.
So the only thing missing out of this is the cost of the actual
transformer. And the three breakers associated with that, yes.
Do I have a motion?
Make a motion, Trey.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay. Ayes have it. Motion approved, Larry.
All right, thank you.
Larry, don't go too far.
I know. Away. I say, I don't know if it's your lucky or unlucky night, but I'm here again. And so this is the semi-annual report from operations. So at operations, the big thing that's happened in operations this year, or the big story in our type of work in operations, which is generating and transmitting power right to the homes, was Texas, the ERCOT disaster, the polar vortex, whatever you want to call it. If you were, how are we set up for that? At Kane Island, we have three generating units that have steam that would be susceptible to cold weather. Two of those units have heat tracing and different things, whether they're up to snuff, because we really don't, hadn't needed in the past. So what's happening now, we're doing a study, we with other utilities in Central Florida are doing a study and say, what risk are we at? Then, and in the meantime, we are going to bring up to the repair to make sure on unit 2 and 3, where we have the heat tracing and things for winterization, and then we'll add what we need on unit 4. Unit 4 doesn't have any, and we'll add that. So we're doing a study, and we'll be prepared in that, for that respect, you know, going forward, if it would be cold weather here. But we'll be ready whether it comes or not.
Larry, is there a specific temperature where that will be required, where that would happen?
Well, it has to be under freezing, and usually for more than a 48-hour period for some of these things to freeze up. Now, we do have things that are very susceptible. We have drain lines that are off of our instrumentation. It's not really like the steam's not going to freeze up, or, and many of our water feeds won't freeze up because they're in a constant move. But we have the instruments that say, that tell us, you know, if a level's high, if the heat's right, they send back. And if these give a bad reading, they could take, make our unit come offline. It would trip offline. And they have lines that, and some of them, especially the ones with steam, have a drip line of water, and those are very susceptible to freezing and giving false signals. We haven't seen that, that condition. 1989 would probably be the closest that we came to those conditions.
So what you're doing is studying how to keep those from freezing.
Well, we know how. What we're studying is how much money do we spend on something. First, we want to see how are we exposed to that. So before we start spending money to put different freeze protection, then we say, then, like you said, where do we put it? Where do we need it? So that we don't go too far or too little, and so that we have it right for what we think would be, I guess that would be their 100-year, like our 100-year storm here has a 100-year freeze there, so we're prepared.
So you're saying it was 2 or 3 days below freezing?
It would have to be a complete cycle of, yes, a couple of days to start freezing things like main water lines, or that our cooling tower might have an effect to start freezing over. It takes a long time. Our cooling tower, but it also has moving water. So as long as we're online and running, and usually in cold weather like that we would be, we need the need for electricity. We're not a lot of risk there. The biggest risk is what's on the side of the boiler and instrumentation.
Well, if that happens, I might consider moving to Miami.
Okay. I guess in the study, we'll add a bus. Yes, we have.
The orange groves.
Uh-huh. When I worked at the Hansel plant, we did put some blowers on things as a precaution on some of our drip lines and things. We did that there. Okay, so what did we do beside? Did you have a question?
No.
Okay, sorry. What did we do beside make plans after the fact that we said this could happen to us? As Jeannie said, it has happened to us. We said, well, how do we get out of this financially? What was the effect of it? This is when our activity with our joint action groups is where we pulled together to try to come out of this the best we could. Gas prices today, natural gas prices, we use a unit called MMBTU, a million BTUs. We buy those, and today it's about $2.50, I think I just saw on today's. They've got between that and $2.80. During that period, it was $19 one day, $23 another day. So that could have ran a cost really high. That's when FGU, who is a Florida Gas Utility, that's who manages the gas for us. We're a member of that. I sit on the board. And they also are the ones that manage it for FMPA. So jointly with we sit on the board, and they furnish the gas for our power plants. Then we have FMPA, and there were certain things that they looked at this and said, you know, how's the opportunities that we can come out of so we don't get hurt, and we're not paying all these high prices and drive the price up for here. The power pool, we use them. We use them as a tool, and the other members in there with how we could benefit the best with having also Lakeland and OUC. And then our operations department pitched in because there were some things that we did to make the best out of this so we didn't get damaged. So what was the financial, you know, how did we get hit? Well, FGU, we didn't get hit at all. They sold our gas, the excess gas that we had, for over $2 million. Now we're saying, whoa, wait, but for the power pool, we spent almost $2 million. But what that is, two things happened. One, we took Unit 3 off because it uses a lot of gas. And even though we had cold weather in load, and we have customers, other customers outside of our all requirements project that we have contracts with, their contract says they receive the power at whatever the cost of natural gas is. So we just pass that cost on to them. We ran Unit 1, as you see it's in there. It's our most reliable oil running unit down at Kane Island. It's an aeroderivative. It's a jet engine off of a plane with a generator on it. The other ones are made just for regular industrial use. So we got it up. It took a little bit of doing, but we got up and we ran oil also to replace. And they also did the same thing down at the Keys. They have a similar unit and ran it on oil. So we displaced power being burned on natural gas so we could give more of that natural gas to FGU to sell. And that's how we got the $2 million. Then FEM, that's the Power Pools sales group. That's our marketing group. And they sold some excess power. We didn't make much of it, $27,000 there. Now, the third-party sales, that goes back up to the red number pool economy. That's where we pass it. So those two numbers are almost a wash. You know, we were able to pass that cost on, but we had to pay to get it. You know, that was the loss. So end of the day, what happened? Well, we didn't get hurt at all. We're plus $2 million. And that was a lot of work with all the different members of these things, you know, I mean, shutting machines off to put gas here and stuff. But at the end of the day, they did well. So we had a good positive end on that. This goes in to help keep your this isn't, you know, a check cut to us. This goes in to keep the price of energy low. Okay, I was talking about Kane Island, you know, doing some of that. Unit 1, so there's Unit 1 was the star in that, but they're not looking so good this year. It's not the fault of the unit. I've shown you in a presentation where we're doing an upgrade on transmission lines. Unit 1's affected by that, so when we powered those lines down to switch them over, Unit 1 was forced offline, you know, couldn't run because of that transmission switchover. It'll be able to operate now. Unit 2, above the average, well, your dotted line's the national average, well above it. Unit 3 did better again, and Unit 4 the same way, it did well. Now, here with our power delivery group, everything from linemen to substations to support to, you name it, the rest of the divisions, as you can notice there, our numbers are starting to come down, and we've been fortunate with some you know, the thunderstorms and things have been quite like they were for some years. But on the other side of it, too, we have a reliability work group that brings every division but power supply division together. And some of the things they come up and that we finished up that Brian started, like the animal guards and things like that, have started to pay off. And when we've looked where we've had grounding problems, that we've fixed those, and we're looking at even better ways to come down. But notice there's a big gap there. We're getting pretty low, and that's going to be significant here in a minute, you'll see. The same thing with the safety. It's not coming down quite as good as the other, but it's hanging in good and doing much better. The line up top that you see and on the other one, that's all the FMPA cities, and that's how we're faring against them. And again, it's an effort from all the power delivery folks, linemen, substation, engineers, you name it. Everybody pitches in. And we did so well that we've just been recognized by American Public Power Association. And not only did we go below our other cities in our state, this is national. We're in the top 25% of the nation in reliable power companies. So it's a good reflection on the folks that work in this department and the folks in this whole company.
Outstanding.
And with that, are there any questions?
Thank you.
Good. Very job. Good.
Thank you so much.
Yep.
Well, it's always.
Very proud.
Okay.
Is this semi-annual or is this the budget?
Madam Chair, yeah, this is item L, the preliminary budget. So on the agenda today, we've got the preliminary budget. This is the first of a series of budget meetings for fiscal year 2022. This preliminary budget conveys staff's best recommendations for capital and staffing for a five-year planning horizon. At this time last year, we were beginning to feel the effects of COVID-19 here in our service territory and around the U.S. and the world. A year later, I'm pleased to report that our staff and our community performed resiliently over the last 12 months. KUA instituted several actions to support our customers, such as increased rate stabilization usage, a moratorium on disconnections, waiving late fees, and redirecting of community support funds to the Good Neighbor Fund. Lower fuel prices during 2020 also allowed us to further reduce customer rates to our customers via the COPA mechanism. As we look forward, we do so with cautious optimism. For fiscal year 2022, Our budget is reflecting FMPA's most conservative economic forecast, reflecting a more muted growth in our customer base when compared to our experience in the last few years. The preliminary budget reflects the following noteworthy items: a five-year, $104 million capital program, of which some of the highlights include the development of a new Osceola Parkway substation and new software implementations that will improve operations and services to our customers. With respect to staffing, it includes a decrease of two full-time equivalent positions from 289 to 287 as a result of AMI, which is the lowest that our staffing levels have been since 2005. But here to provide a little more detail about the budget is Kevin Crawford, Vice President, Finance and Administration.
Madam Chair, thank you all this afternoon. As Brian has shared with you today, we're going to talk about the projected budget for capital and staffing, a preliminary budget that starts the series of conversations that we have with you about what to expect for our budget. We're going to talk about today some of the agenda, which you are probably familiar with at this point, our load forecast and how that informs our decision for capital and staffing, and also looking at the 2022 budget with projections for the 23 through 26 years for the capital portion of our budget. And beyond that, after I share that with you today, then Cindy Herrera, our VP of Human Resources, will come up and share with you any staffing additions, deletions, and reorgs, and any market level adjustment recommendations that staff will have. And then finally, the vice presidents and those directors with budgeting responsibilities will come and share those recommendations to you as well for staffing and for capital. And before we jump into the details, just kind of an overview, you won't see any surprises in this budget. We don't like to surprise you. It's in our best interest not to surprise you. Brian doesn't like surprises.
No, I don't.
So we always like to keep things looking ahead, and we try to take a long view on these our capital and staffing forecasts. And so before this ever gets to you, in the printed version that you did receive this past week, where you have the details before you to dig into and ask questions about. But before that gets to you, we do have a series of meetings. Both all the VPs and budgeting responsibility folks meet with my staff for almost an entire day. And then additionally, we all then in turn meet with the general manager for another full day. You could say scrutinize. That's a generous word. I'd say running the gauntlet would probably be a better comparison for that. But those items that survive the scrutiny of our general manager make it into this document. So these are looked at in great detail, and Brian asks very good and very pointed questions of us and our staff before they ever arrive to you. And so that just gives you sort of a background on how things look before they get into your hands. So yes, ma'am.
Is that why we have A, B, and C?
Yes, ma'am. And I'll explain that again, because that is we did do that again this year. Yes, ma'am. And so and I'll share that with you momentarily. But to answer your question, we did do those categorizations. And again, that was at Brian's direction, as you recall, when he took the position. So in April 7th, which is today, we'll take about the preliminary budget meeting, and this again is the overview of the budgeting process for capital and staffing. Then we'll come back to you in June and talk about the O&M expenses and what that might look like. And then the public budget hearing is July 7th, where we will ask you to or recommend that you adopt the budget that we've presented to you at that time for the formal budget adoption or resolution. And then we have an alternative date, which we have not had to use, fortunately, but it's there in the event that there is a prolonged discussion or the need for an additional meeting to discuss anything. We have that on the calendar as well. And then the new budget begins October 1 for the fiscal year. So the big driver that we look at before we begin this conversation is the load forecasting. And we work that with that in conjunction with FMPA that Larry Madden referred to previously in his operations report. They are a big part of what we do in terms of load forecasting. We look at several scenarios. We look at the econometric model, which just means they look at a lot of different factors and then try to figure out what's the most realistic possibility for what load forecasting is going to be for us for the coming year. We use that to determine, obviously, important things like generation planning for the all requirements project we build by our contract, more power, and what our staffing requirements will be to support those needs. And so that, if we look at the fiscal year 22 forecast, what we see is that we've anticipated a 1.9% customer growth and a 1.6% growth in electric sales. Those are good numbers. However, those are the most conservative estimates that we looked at when we look at the comparative scenarios. Given COVID's impacts, we still don't know what those will be long-reaching. So we take a conservative view of what those numbers might be. And we're pleased to see what our historic growth has been, and I'll look at that in the next slide. And you can see we had strong customer growth historically, particularly at a time when a lot of our peers, utilities in the state of Florida, did not fare so well. But as Osceola County is one of the fastest growing counties in the country, we've done very well. And so we're very pleased with our terms in terms of customer growth. And so additionally, if you look at the megawatt hour sales year over year from the past 5 years, again, a positive story there. This obviously the increase kind of slows down toward the more recent years. As we learned that additional growth in customers doesn't always translate one for one to additional sales in megawatt hours for a lot of reasons. But so we tend to take a conservative view again for the coming year for those percentage increases. Then the capital programs, to get to your point, Ms. Cheney, essential due to regulatory contractual obligations is the highest category. That's the category A. That's the ones that we consider to be absolutely non-negotiable. These have to be done with respect to things like compliance or regulatory issues that are important that have to be done. Category Bs, then, are those that are essential to maintaining our current level of service, not required, obviously, regulatorily or legally, but nonetheless things that staff feels are important to maintain or expand the level of service that we have to our customers. And then the final category is Category C, which all those items, the other items that aren't legally required, that are essential, but nonetheless we feel like would be very good to have in order to enhance our current level of service or our customer experience. In previous years, you'd seen the AMI project was one of the projects that were in this category. And for these coming budget years, you will see things like substation access equipment, some safety monitoring equipment in those areas, the work order management system, which will help us track and utilize our inventory in a more efficient manner. So those are the things, and that's kind of the nature of those that category. So all of them we feel are good investments for KUA, but we do categorize them along the lines that Director Van Meter had just asked about. So that's how we've continued to do that again for this year and for coming years. The overall capital program, as you can see, as Brian's already mentioned to you, a roughly $104 million program through 2026. And those are the categories that break out in terms of next year's budget, the $2.7 million in Category A. The largest piece of that, then, as you saw in prior years, the $19.7 million in Category B. And then additionally, then Category C, about $1 million or so within that category for a total of $23.5 million in the total budget for capital for next year. Again, all that comes from the document you received that went into exquisite detail that shows you each of those categories within each of the departments, but this is just obviously a high-level summary for the purpose of our discussion today. Then as you look at it by department, you can see how they break out, the lion's share, and we'll see this on a graphic in the next slide, the biggest piece of that in operations, as you would expect. They put the infrastructure in the ground and in the air to make sure that we maintain our level of service that our customers have come to expect. And then within the other departments, you can see the much smaller relative comparisons or percentages of the budget within those areas. And then the offsetting capital that's paid by FMPA, that's particular to the Kane Island operations, and Larry can talk about that when he comes up. But also then those other areas where we have developer contributions for external line extensions, and the bottom numbers there you see for contributed capital operations, that's where those numbers come in. So it's an investment in the infrastructure that we make, but over time we recoup that investment from the service that we provide and the revenues that brings back into the utility. And also we receive reimbursement from the developers for a percentage of those expenditures. And that gets you to the budget level. If you look through the graph here, again, like I explained for the previous, that those were the numbers. And this is kind of gives you that graphical representation. The orange cupcakes there with the pink icing, the biggest part of that cupcake there, that's the operations, as you'd expect. That's where the KUA makes its money. That's our core business. And operations make sure that we do that continually in a safe manner, in a reliable manner. As you saw in Larry's report with the safety and safety numbers that you reflect there. And I think that it reflects the infrastructure investment that we make here. And this is why we spend the money we do in those categories, because it does enhance those reliability and safety aspects of our operations. The big category there that you saw in the rollover section, which you don't see in 21 or 22, was the AMI project, which is at completion. And Susan can talk about that some more, but that's a big one. That was one of the bigger expenditures that certainly I've seen since I was here, along with the substation that we did also as well. So that one is coming to completion. We're starting to already realize some benefits from that and the data that we're able to gather. So even more so as that begins to be utilized in the manner that, that the board anticipated. So this is just the graphical. You can see then for the future years out to 2026, our recommendations for capital there. I welcome any questions at this time on this portion of the presentation. As I said earlier, each of the vice presidents and the directors with budgeting responsibility will come up to share with you momentarily. But at this point, I would like to welcome Cindy Herrera, who's our VP of Human Resources, up to share her portion today, unless you have questions for me, which I'm happy to answer at this time.
No.
Thank you.
Any questions, anybody?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Hey, again, good afternoon. Nice to see everyone. I have with us the human resources overview of the organization that I will be presenting. What you have is the organization organizational chart, which reflects a decrease. Let me take this off. Okay. I can breathe. Okay. Reflecting a decrease, and you probably can understand me better, reflecting a decrease of two full-time equivalents in the customer service department. I'll be showing that here in a little more detail. Current. Our current authorized positions is 289, our full-time equivalent. And staff is recommends a reduction of two full-time equivalents for the fiscal year of 2022, which then approval of the adjusted of the position adjustment would be 287 full-time equivalent. This reflects specifically where that reduction is for fiscal year 2022, and that is in the customer service department. What you also see here on this slide is the projection of no other further changing to staff for the next 5 years. Last but not least here for you, recommending, and we do this annually for the budgeting for budgeting purposes, we are recommending, staff is recommending for planning purposes only, a market level adjustment of 3% for fiscal year 2022 annual budget. And that's it. Any questions? Yes, Director Hill.
With the 3%, how does that compare for the national average of inflation? Is it keeping pace, going above or below what is expected? Or
Are you referring for the cost of living? Mm-hmm. Okay. I know the cost of living is normally less than what we reflect for a market level adjustment. So that is, I believe, approximately 1.45 currently.
Okay.
And that's just the cost of living adjustment.
I did hear recently that the cost of food is continuing to escalate, and that's something that we all have to have, whether it's here or somewhere else. And I just wanted to make sure that this would be adequate for the increases in that. And I think that the cost of fueling your vehicle may be going up as well.
Okay. Yes.
Any other questions? Any motion to approve this?
I move.
Second? Do I have a second? Do I hear ayes?
Aye.
Okay, motion approved. We approved the 3% for fiscal year 2022. Okay. Thank you very much,
Cindy. Thank you all very much.
What's the matter?
Next is Barry.
And hello again. And I'll take you through the operations department. As I've shown before, and those here are new, this is the power supply division of operations, and you'll see these are in green. There's a reason for that. As I go through the rest of the org chart, you'll see that it's in gray. The green means that FMPA refunds the all the pay to the dollar, and then also all the benefits. And then we have an A&G adder of 30%. And when that's paid, we realize $2 million of additional money for them. And we have one of the jobs is half paid there, just to make a differential. They work here and for there both, so we get half the pay. And this is the rest of the divisions. As you see, we have we have the linemen, as you well know, and we have the communications to them. Then we have our substations, and also we have all of our engineering folks that go to our customers that for outside construction and things like that. And we're the same amount. Our projection of the department should stay the same size now and for the next few years as we see projection. We're able to do what we're doing with the folks we have at this time. And going down this, this will be the one time that I just visit Kane Island for a second, because actually this isn't even reimbursable. This is paid directly. But the big thing at Kane Island this year, for your information, or this coming year, will be Unit 3's outage. It's a major outage, and the machine will be tore completely apart. And it'll be an opportunity if we can get folks down to those of you who've seen a major outage. It really gives you an opportunity to see inside a machine. So the big projects that we're doing is the Osceola Parkway substation. And what we're doing there, this was also out of the 2017 planning, and we're up to that 5 year. We would have had to do it sooner, but you've approved that we've added an extra transformer out here at Hoard. So that's taken some of the load off of the north central, and this will be the northwest out here. So we have some additional feeders we've put there, and we're putting on. So that takes a little bit of the load off of it, but we'll have that. So that will actually be built in the following 2 years. It takes a couple years to get that in. And it'll have one transformer, and then the next thing beside it, we're going to set the mobile transformer. And what the mobile transformer does, it gives us the ability that we'll keep it warmed up there, but if any transformer in any of our other substations would go bad, a lead time on a transformer it could be a year. So we could disconnect that, make a reconnection at the substation we would need within days instead of within months or a year. So that's going to be a good addition for us to have that. Right below that, the transmission location relocation, that's something that has been here for a couple years, and we're at the mercy of the county on this. They're widening Neptune Road, if any of you have been down there. And this following year, their planning department said this is when they plan to do it. So that's our easement. That's easement right away we use of there. So if they want us to move out of to another part of the easement, then we have to do as they ask, so they can widen the highway. And then line extensions, you've been told a few times now, but what that is, when we say external line extensions, that's when they're building house and developments or a store or running thing. And a lot of that money we get back. We have to have the money to pay for it to start out. But some of them, we get a certain percentage back. Or if it's a direct thing that they just need, then they pay 100%. And then the last is internal. And one of our strategic goals is to put so much underground, replace underground. That's one of the things that's in there, about $2 million of that. But it's anything that we do to maintain our lines, anything that we do internal ourselves, or to connect to a place that would be where a business is coming. So that's what that is. So those are the big ones. Are there any questions on those while we're on the big ones there? And that's my report on that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great. Thank you, Mike. Hello, board. I guess we lost our monitor here.
Quick look at our org chart. We've got some consolidation that occurred. We had a manager retire, and at that time we took advantage of consolidating some of the divisions in IT to tighten things up and put more workforce down at the frontline level where we can build our bench, so to speak, for the frontline workers. And save a little money in the process. This is the staffing. Very conservative staffing in IT. We've not had explosive growth in terms of, well, certainly the work is there, but we've been able to economize quite a lot and keep our staffing numbers low and not having, you know, tons and tons of people being at it every year. In terms of capital, there's one item I'd like to talk a little bit about because it's almost half of that that entire capital budget. These numbers overall, when you look at those summary amounts there at the bottom, this is a lull year for us. We've had a couple of years where we've been able to keep it around 500,000, but not typical. Results not typical. Typically, you're going to see somewhere between 500,000 and 800,000 a year. I just don't want everybody to get used to that number and think it's a shock when it goes back up. But as you know, KUA relies on IT quite a bit relies on IT quite a bit in terms of keeping us modern and efficient, and that means buying more computers and more data. Speaking of that data, as you can see, $225,000 for that disk-based backup unit. To give you a sense of scale, because I know these things are just numbers and titles, in the year 2000, we had 200 gigabytes of data for the entire company. One server, all of the data for 100 years was 200 gig. We generate that in less than 3 days now in terms of data that pumps through the organization. That doesn't include the AMI data. That's just the work, the day-to-day. Backing that up, if you can imagine backing up terabytes and terabytes of data to the tune of 316 terabytes right now versus that year 2000, that's a 150,000% increase in data over that 21 years. Again, and every day more, 10% a year will be added based on current projections. We need a disk that's not only able to hold all that and store it for backups and other things, but it has to be fast enough to back it up and finish because tomorrow we run a backup again. So that's why you see these high prices when you see these huge servers that we have to store the data on. It's all based on just massive and massive amounts of data that we absolutely need to run our organization. Otherwise, we'd be overflowing with file cabinets and paper.
How long?
We've gone paperless. It's a lot of paperless. Yeah, in order to make things more efficient, a good example would be a customer who wants to initiate service with us, and they do it online, and they're sending us, you know, documents and copies of driver's licenses and so forth. All of that is digital files that have to be stored and retrievable for public records purposes, operational, and sometimes we have to duplicate the redacted version, and it just goes on and on. That's just one example of many of why the data grows as quick as it does.
What is the retention period for us?
The retention schedule is quite lengthy by the state requirements, and it depends on what kind of document we're talking about. There are some documents that we have to keep eternally, and there are some that within 3 years we can purge those off, and we have schedules to keep track of all that because it's quite a lot of information. Other questions on that before I move on? Great, because I'm done. There you go.
Good afternoon. So here is the first part of our organizational chart, and there were no changes in this part of the organization. Page 2, this is where there were changes. So you can see the reduction of a meter reader supervisor position and 2 part-time meter reading positions. Now, keep in mind that we had to pick a date and take a snapshot, and this is as of March 23rd, and there have been additional changes since then. So when we come back with the final budget, we will bring an updated org chart so that you can see the additional changes that have occurred since then. And there you can see again, we've had changes, but from the adjusted, it's the reduction of 2 full-time equivalents. Typically, I come up here and ask for meters and trucks. This year, I only need meters. This will be our first full year post-AMI. So this is our educated guess on what we would need to maintain CT services and meters that are damaged through natural causes or physically damaged. And that's it.
Good afternoon. I will share at this point the finance administration as well as the general management's budget. for the our recommendation for the capital and staffing for the coming year. And you can see with the department, within our department, we did have two identified needs that we had two staff increases for this year. One is for the fleet mechanic helper, and we did have one additional facilities worker for our area that was added. And to Susan's point, we do take a snapshot in time, so this is constantly in flux. And so we will bring back any modifications or changes back to you with our next org chart that you can take a look at then for our next meeting. And moving ahead into the capital piece, the biggest portion of what recommendations within our department are obviously under the facilities maintenance side. And we can give you a highlight of each of those items or just an overview. As you can see, as you're aware, you know, our building has served us very well, but it is aging, and so it does require some upkeep and maintenance. And some of the more particularly expensive items are the HVAC control system, which does run all the air conditioning within this building. We are enhancing our reporting functionality with P-cards. We also have some renovations taking place for some dated facilities within the second floor. And then we also have the budget item for replacements and additions. And it's those things that you don't know are going to break, and sometimes they break. And that's so we have a bit of a contingency amount there just in the event for unplanned. And we almost always use that. So sometimes you just can't plan everything. That's just how life works. And then, obviously, then the gates from a security standpoint, if you go to Lackey, there are gates on the north and south side of Lackey, and they see a lot of traffic that comes through them. And again, the wear and tear on those require their replacement periodically, and we've anticipated that for our budget for FY22 as well. Then moving into the general manager's office, you can see that there are no changes within the org chart there in the general manager's area. And the numbers, again, numerically, you can see they're the same across the board. And there are only two items in the general manager's capital budget that they're recommending for you today. One is the $27,000 for the big grill that I think you've seen, many of you have probably used. It gets a lot of generates a lot of goodwill in our community. It's a great opportunity to get KUSNAM out there, and it's been utilized extensively. And so, unfortunately, the time has come for us to replace it and to put a new one in place. And so that's in the budget for next year. And also, we have a postage machine, which is on its last leg. It's served us well, again, but parts are becoming obsolete. It's very dated, and so we feel like it's time to go ahead and replace that in our current in FY22 for that fiscal year budget. And that is all I have for those two areas, and happy to bring up Cindy Herrera for Human Resources. Unless there are questions, I'm happy to answer.
No, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Okay, what you have in front of you there is our HR department organizational chart, which provides support to all of our external and internal, I should say, internal and external customers. Our staffing, there are no increases. Previous change from 2021 was just moving a admin position from the 1800 division to a generalist position under the 1810 operations. But again, no change or additions to our staffing. Moving on to capital, we have, after seeing Larry's and everybody else's, we do have some capital recommendations that we will be providing. It's actually two, totaling $20,000. And they are broken out by our copier scanner, our fax printer replacement of $10,000. It has passed its unit's life of almost 10 years, and normally they run about five. So we've really used this one all the way to the end. So we do need a replacement. Next that you see there is our NeoGov HRIS system, our core HR and benefits. And this platform, what it supports is the software to assist with employees' records and benefit administration, manage and track HR data while achieving compliance, and provide self-service access to employees. And that is the second capital item there. Any questions?
Any questions?
No.
Nope. Okay. Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you very much.
So I'm here to present our community sponsorships. This is a board-directed program, as you know, that was established in 1995 that works to improve the quality of life for the communities that we serve. This is the community sponsorship history dating back to 2016. The cap amount you see there on the sponsorships is tied to the price of a first-class postage stamp multiplied by our annual residential customers times 12 months. So that cap in 2022 would be $476,863. And we are 24% below that. This is a list of the organizations that we donate to. These are just placeholders. These requests come in on a first come, first serve basis and are honored that way. So this money is not guaranteed to these organizations. This is just a breakdown to show you how historically it's been allocated. This list represents more than 60 community organizations that reach a combined 250,000 individuals in our community. And you see there the total recommendation is $361,175.
There's a $20,000 increase. What is that for?
So each year our sponsorships tend to increase. I'll go back to this slide. You can see there they do increase every year, and so new organizations, we get money for new organization requests from new organizations every year, and that's what that increase is for.
So that $20,000 is split among a whole bunch of them? Or is there one specific that is asking for $20,000?
No, that would be across
everything.
Yeah.
That's in anticipation.
Correct. And again, these are just placeholders.
Yes, because we will be seeing all the requests later on, right?
That's correct.
As they come in?
If at anything above $5,000 mm-hmm. comes before the board.
$5,000
more. Yes, ma'am.
Can we change that stamp value that doesn't relate to this anymore? And we're always off by a lot from it anyway.
Let me recommend you let staff go back and see if we can come up with something that makes a little more sense for the board.
I don't understand what you're asking for.
You know how they come up with an amount, an annual amount to provide based on the cost of the stamps?
Oh, okay.
So, and we never meet that amount.
It was always, as I understand it, Madam Chair, this was something that was approved by the board when we established the program as a maximum not to exceed amount. It was just a threshold that was set up. Hey, don't ever exceed this amount. You know, and we can bring.
See how it relates to donations anyway.
It was just a figure. It was done years ago.
Yeah. I think the last time we visited the policy was 2014.
2000. Yeah, I believe it was 2004. Yeah.
It was a long time ago.
That's when the stamps were probably 20 cents.
Yeah. When they were 10 cents.
Stamp now is
55 cents.
5 cents, yeah.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I guess, is that it for the budget presentation?
Yes, Madam Chair.
So next we go and hear our attorney.
Thank you, Madam
Madam Chair, good evening. Madam Chair, board members, just a few items. First, I want to thank everyone for this excellent meeting we had with Congressman Soto. Really pleased to see that he's going to be on board co-sponsoring the advance for funding bill, H.R. 2288. That's in Congress right now. And he did seem, I felt, appropriately sympathetic to our concerns in terms of the Clean Futures Act that's been released by the House Energy and Commerce Committee in terms of how that would impact natural gas generation going to net zero sooner than 2050, how that might impact our customers' rates. So it was a very good conversation, and he's very, very important individual because he serves on that committee. So we're very lucky to have him there. And then I wanted to update you on House Bill 1239. That is this really problematic bill before the Florida legislature that requires our customers to subsidize shareholders of Fortune 100 companies such as AT&T and Verizon. It basically puts the costs of their attachments mostly on us with very aggressive scheduling that could interfere with our own planning and safety standards on our infrastructure. The bill is moving. I regret to tell you it is moving. But when it's before committees, just about every member on these committees complains about it, and they pledge that they're going to work with us to come up with something that everybody likes. So I'm still waiting to see what that will look like. I'll keep you all posted, hopefully with good news next month. And finally, on a sad note, legendary local attorney Gordon Stumpy Harris passed away April 1st. Stumpy was the founding member of the Gray Harris and Robinson law firm. He was legendary among the legal profession in Central Florida, and he and his firm did a magnificent job assisting us when we had to acquire expanded right-of-way for our transmission line that goes down John Young and then crosses Pleasant Hill Road all the way to our relatively new Pleasant Hill substation. So we're going to miss him terribly. And with that, I stand for any questions.
Any questions?
Thank you.
I have a question regarding the antennas, not for you, I guess for everybody. Have you seen those antennas that that look like a tree, a Christmas tree? No, they're not there?
On Shady Lane.
Yeah, the cellular tower.
Cell tower. Well, they look nice. They look better than the antennas, I guess.
They look out of
place.
Yeah,
as long as they don't stick that on our pole, right? But yeah, that looks nice.
General Manager?
Sure, I have no update today other than the board reminders that are there.
Directors, any questions? Raymond?
No, thank you.
No comments?
No questions, but I just would like to encourage all the employees of KUA to please be vigilant, even though we've just come through a year of a pandemic. But don't let your guard down because it's a little too soon.
Jenny?
Just get your shot, get your vaccinations. It's important. So, they don't hurt. I've had both mine. Some people say they do hurt. It's worth a little bit of hurt to be healthy. We'd like to see herd immunity. We're going to get rid of this fear of being around. So just get your shots.
Get the protection. Manny?
I just have a point of information. I had a conversation recently with a ratepayer, and one of the viewers on the internet, and the conversation went along the lines that sometimes we don't have a lot of questions, when like tonight when everyone came in front of us and with all these numbers and they wanted to know why there weren't many more questions from the board, This is a public meeting. I informed the individual as what happens. I give him a little background that once a month, each board member sits down with the CEO and the president, and we go over everything that's going to be presented in front of us. So most, if not all, the questions that we have are answered at that point. So I just want to clear that for the public that when we make decisions, the questions that we come up, we still come up with questions, but a lot of those, for example, one tonight that I think that Cindy spoke about, that we have two less full-time staff members, and there was no question on that. Most of the time, we said, well, what happened there and so forth? But we have that information. We have that background and so forth. So we are making informative decisions here as board members. And I just wanted to tell the public that.
Yeah, I appreciate you doing that, Director.
Good point. You always get plenty of information.
Thank you, Manny. Any questions, any comments?
No.
No? Well, thank you very much, everybody. Great meeting, nice numbers. Congratulations, everybody, all the ones that had anniversaries. We had like 200 years worth.
Well, what happened 5 years ago? Look at all the people that came.
Yeah, a whole bunch of people 5 years.
We had a lot leave and a lot come on.
Thank you, and meeting adjourned.
My last announcement. I'm a